Well, today, folks, we're visiting with the John Malloy family out here at Laurel. John Malloy and his wife, the Malloy family, are certainly old-timers in Washington County. In fact, they have the honor of having an over 100-year farm, a century farm. It's been in the Malloy family for over 100 years. Well, we're seated here at a very attractive kitchen of the Malloys, ready here to chat with John Malloy. So, John, by golly, let's just talk about the Malloy family. Now, before we turn the tape machine on, John, you actually can go back to the old countries, they say, to trace the Malloy family. So I'd like to have you go over that, if you would, John.
Well, Alfred D. Malloy came to America, up to Canada, when he was 13 years old. He was a blacksmith, and his wife, Mary Jane, came from Ireland when she was 19 years old. Well, they came down into, lived a while in the central part of Iowa, later on moved down to the south central. And in 1871, that's before the any railroad into Portland, they came to Frisco on the immigrant train and an ocean schooner up to Portland, settled down at Albany in 71 for 1 year, and then my grandfather, Alfred D. Malloy, came up here south of Laurel and donation land claim filed on 80 acres just south of the Laurel store. And his son, Alfred B. Malloy, he was 20 years old at that time. When he was 21 the next year, on Section 7 across the road from the house here, he bought that land from the railroad company. It's every odd section, you know, in the early days went to the Oregon California Railroad. So he bought, later on sold that to my grandfather, and my parents were married in Portland. That's Edward C. Malloy and his wife Linda Hornet Malloy. They were married in 1886, moved out to this farm here, and lived here until they both passed away. And John Malloy, he was born down the old house where they started in 1891. Well, I've been on this farm a long time, and still a-going in the nut business, and I don't know what else you want.
All right. Well, now, John, you did a beautiful job there. Let's just kind of back up a little bit here. I think you undoubtedly have a lot of early family records, letters possibly. This would be your great-grandfather now, who came over from, he came down from Canada.
Well, that was my grandfather. Great-grandfather. No, that was my grandfather. I think they were married up in Canada. Come to Toronto, settled there, and my grandmother had relatives there in Canada, the Dearhearts, so I think then they were married, and then they moved. Alfred D. Malloy and his wife moved down into Devonport, Iowa. It was a town. That's central Iowa. And later on, they moved on down south central.
I believe you said he married an Irish colleen. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. She came from Ireland when she was 19.
I see. Well, now, do you have any records, John, real early records, possibly letters that they may have written or notes that they may have made some way or other about some of the hardships that they encountered and so on, John, in this moving around? Of course, back in those days, moving around was a pretty hard process.
Yeah. We don't have any particular records.
That far.
Yeah.
Yeah, you bet. All right, now, we have your...
They seemed to get along just as well them days as we did. Of course, they didn't have the convenience, but they all get along, lived just as well, and were just as happy as we are today, for that matter.
I think you're absolutely right, John. Well, now let's move back to your parents, who took up this donation land claim. What year was that, John?
Well, I give the date of the land claim.
Yeah, I know. You had a date back.
72, and the next year, Alfred B. Malloy bought that there. Then in 1886, my father got married, and he bought the... in the meantime, Alfred B. Malloy had sold that 80 railroad land to my grandfather, Alfred D. Malloy. So, you see, so in 86, when my father married, he bought the railroad land, 80 across the road there. And my dad never homesteaded on it. He wasn't old enough. He's 12 years old when he come here. See, he was 12. Grandfather homesteaded, and the other brother, 8 years older, he was 20 when they settled here. So when you're 21, then you can homestead or buy any of them.
I tried to grow your dad up too fast there,
yeah,
John,
yeah.
A while ago.
Well, that's my grandfather.
Yeah, he's your grandfather, sure.
My great-grandfather, I don't know anything about them.
John, Mrs. Malloy have been showing me some old pictures that go way back. All right, now back in those days, back in your dad's days, there were a lot of hops grown in Washington County, John. Let's get into that hop thing a little bit here. Gosh, we had a lot of acreage. I'm going to try to dig out, John, what we did finally build up. Now, this is just prior to World War I, wasn't it, John?
Yeah, that was in the, in the 90s, all through the 90s and the early 1900s, hops and... there was a lot of potatoes grew on up here. What they call, the dealers were out from Portland after them, Mountain Burbanks. It was a famous potato grew on here. And farmers all grew a large number of potatoes. And the hops were quite a familiar crop around here in that time.
Mm-hmm. Now this would be dry land potatoes, John, you're talking.
Yeah, that's dry. Everything was dry land here, no irrigation.
And the hops were for a beverage we could mention, I would suppose.
Well, they always looked to England for their market mainly. It would depend on the price of hops, of what are the English. They're the ones that come over here and really bought the hops and did the marketing.
Yeah. I suppose they hauled them by wagon into Portland and then
we
hauled
them
ship.
Into Hillsborough, bailed them here, and they come and take a sample send them to their buyers, brokers, hop dealers would come around, take a sample out of your bale, and then they'd send them away, and then they'd send back a bid on them, what prices they wanted to pay.
Mm-hmm. So the first jump was to Hillsborough.
We baled the hops on the farm. They were all baled in burlap, and 200-pound bales. Mm-hmm. And then we hauled them in, loaded them on a car, rail car at Hillsborough.
Okay, speaking of rail, of course at that time, John, we had quite a railroad network going out of Portland, out here in the valley, didn't we?
Yeah, the railroad, some of the Civic at that time. Oregon Electric came in on the west side in 1908, but the shipping in was with Southern Pacific mainly, and then later on we shipped with SPNS, we call it, or Oregon Electric. That was from 1908 on.
Well, now, of course, that was a mighty long time before my time, but I understand you could ride that Oregon Electric, well, clear to Tillamook. Is that right, John?
No, that was a PRN to Tillamook.
Oh.
A branch off of the Pacific Railway and Navigation, PRN, was built into Tillamook. The Oregon Electric built into Forest Grove, and then from Forest Grove to Portland, goes through Garden Home, Beaverton, Garden Home. There were 16 stops. It ended in, Front and Jefferson in Portland. Front Street and Jefferson was the dead end of the Oregon Electric line. That's where they always, till later on, then the freight cars got down First Street, I believe.
Mm. Where could you catch that one that went to Tillamook, John?
Well,
Is that out of Portland or?
No, that was out of Hillsboro.
Oh, you could catch it here too.
You could take some of the Pacific out of Tillamook out and transfer here.
In other words, they ran it in conjunction with their freight line, is what it amounted to.
Tillamook, what year that opened up? About 19. We rode over there in 1914. Must have been about 1912, 13, somewhere along there. Exact date, I ain't quite sure.
Well, I understand it was the early 40s, or very late 30s.
We went over to Tillamook.
When they built the highway, the, what is it, the highway that goes?
Sunset.
Sunset.
Mm-hmm. The automobile then was going.
John, I'd like to ask you a little bit about your farming here on. Now, you have actually been living on this place. You were born close to here, weren't you?
Living on the farm all my life here. The old house where I was born, and my dad had built a house across the road from my house here now. When we got married in 1913, we lived in that house until 53, wife and I, and then we built a new house on the west side of the road, which we live here now.
And a beautiful home you have, John, may I say in passing. It's a beautiful home. What type of farming have you done, John, down through the years?
After we plowed up the hops and got going, entered into mainly was dairy. We had the condenser at Hillsboro, milk condenser. That's what we call the dog food plant now.
It's located right where it is.
A milk condenser, and we shipped dairy and shipped our milk into Portland. Then later on, Portland branched out here and picked up grade A dairies, and along about 30, somewhere along there, I had a Guernsey herd and shipped grade A milk into Portland. And the greatest share of the milk was going into Portland at that time, through the 30s, the Depression days, and the 40s, and so on, which still does that out here now.
Yeah.
We had the famous milk war in 1931. Did I tell them about
that? Sure, go right ahead. We got the machine going here, John.
The milk war, a good many of you probably have heard about it. Anyway, we formed a dairy cooperative. Will Henry from Seattle was hired as manager. And the dairies in Portland didn't want to do any business with the dairy co-op. They didn't want anything to do with them. So to bring them into time so they would recognize and pay our dairy co-op, and then the dairy co-op kept out 5% of our paycheck for their operating and building plants expenses. Why, in August, in order to bring them into time, we had what we call a milk war. We met Portland, and we had different locals. There was West Union, Laurel Shoals, Oregon City, Clackamas County, a local, Clark County, Washington, local dairy organizations to work with our dairy co-op. So we were called into Portland on a Friday evening and mapped everything out how we would work a milk strike. So on Saturday morning, there was no milk to go into Portland unless it was for a hospital or a baby home or something like that. All I had to do to let a truck go by that hauled the milk in cans in them days, they would dairyman get on the back of the truck and wave his hands to the dairymen that were out striking and stopping all trucks and dumping the milk. Well, we really dumped milk. There was one, they thought they'd, I think Riverview was operating there in Portland from Carnation, had Hillsboro plant. Well, they loaded up a truck load and the dairyman got wind of it, and it was coming in about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, entered Beaverton where the green light, Cedar Hills Boulevard, that light. Well, they had a 500-gallon bulk tank of milk. So the dairymen on strike, a lot of them guys were West Union, Burgers and Beckon, they Mount North there and all around the country. And there was a lot of people that were in with us dairymen and helped us out. Not exactly all just dairymen. Anyway, they pulled the spigot on that truck and let it all out. Well, there was some lady had a, just beyond that filling station, had a house and run into their basement. It only took 2 or 3 days, and on a Sunday evening, I tell you why the dairymen won. Julius Meyer, a Myron Frank, was governor at that time, so he knew all about this. Our manager, Will Henry, was a very shrewd manager and well-liked, knew how to handle things. And first they contacted the governor and then the different sheriffs of different counties. And Julius Meyer, the governor of Oregon, told the state police to lay your hands off the dairymen. You catch them driving, dumping milk or obeying the law. But way the state patrolman come along and down at Taylor's Ferry Road, I was with that once there, and he says, now if I catch you obeying the law, don't get all riled up, just get in your cars. What happens a mile down the road doesn't make any difference to me. And John Connell, he was sheriff at that time. This was 1931 in first part of August. Well, John Connell, the Washington County Sheriff, got out what we call a soapbox on the corner of 2nd and Main, and he hooped her up and says to the airman, go to it. We're all behind you. So that's success we had. We had no trouble. And I think it was only a couple of days. All the dairy processing plants were willing to sign up and do business with Dairy Co-op, which grew into a large organization.
Oh, indeed it has, John. It certainly has grown.
I was chairman of the board down here, you know.
Oh, you were chairman of the board down here.
Law show was local.
I
routed them out. Where'd they go?
John, I've heard in my travels that the Malloy, you had an awfully good herd of Guernseys at one time.
I really had an outstanding herd of Guernseys when I was dairying. Mm-hmm. So in the year 1943, I made good records, and DHI records, testing. And so in 1943, my son-in-law, my daughter, had gotten married in 1942, Thelma. Mm-hmm. Pardon me. So I said to my son-in-law, Mr. Davison over here, that's the Crabtree farm originally, the Whittle Ranch. Go over and buy that and sell the cows and wouldn't have to haul manure. He was hauling manure at that time. So we sold the cows, bought over the next day and bought the ranch. That put us really in the nut business. I had set out 25 acres of walnuts myself, and there was about 70 on that place. So that set us in the nut, and now today we're in the filberts and walnuts.
How many acres are you grazing?
Well, I have a nice young filbert, 40 acres, 12-year-old, and the walnuts, there's 33 acres left on this side. I did have 100, and I sold that off to my hired man, 70 acres.
Yeah, you grew up to a sizable operation. John, I don't want to wear your voice completely out here. But gosh, I appreciate so much coming on the mic here and talking about the early Malloy family. I did have one quick note, though, thing. John, what year was it that you received your certificate as a 100-year farm or a century farm?
1973.
Oh, you got it in 1973.
One year after the 72.
Now, that would have been
signed. We didn't get around to get things organized, so...
See, which governor? See, that'd be Governor.
Governor Tom McCall.
Tom signed it, didn't he?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh huh. Well, John, bless your heart, thank you very much for visiting with me. Gosh, I've learned a lot about early Washington County and the farming out here and this talk with you.
You probably didn't know anything about the milk war.
I just heard of it, John.
You didn't know just how it operated, how we went.
And of course, back in those good old days, John, you paled them by hand. Am I right? Or did you use machines?
We got milk machines right in along there, mm-hmm. Milking machines.
John, thanks so much for sitting here, visiting at your kitchen table here in this beautiful kitchen you have here in your home out here near Shoals. The John Mullen.
Laurel.
I got you over by Shoals already.
Yeah.
Oh, by Laurel. Excuse me, John. I'm sorry.
The Hillsborough live in Laurel. They look, they don't know where Laurel is, some of them.
If you want to go for a beautiful Sunday drive sometime, folks, come on out by Laurel. You just come on out Highway 8, or come out Highway 46. Let's get the highway to
Community Hall, Community Church, and a good country store. Bud Solar, store man.
Or you can buy most anything you want to buy. Fine. Well, you come on out, the cutoff goes over to Newburgh. And
219,
and then you come on out about 6 miles out of Hillsborough, and at the junction that goes, the one road takes off to the left, goes back to Beaverton, one to the right comes to Laurel.
Farmington
Road, where Farmington comes in there. And then you come on out, take a right though, and come on over here to Laurel, a couple miles or so?
About 2.5 miles.
Yeah, something like that on down. Beautiful time of the year. The grain's looking great out here this time of the year. It's nice and green, John, in closing our little tape here, we writers, people who work all the medias, like quotes. What has been your philosophy, John, down through the years? Golly, you've worked this old good Mother Earth out here a long time, and I know you have a philosophy on life. I'd like to hear it. I'm sure that I'm going to warn you, I'm after a quote here from John Lloyd. John, what has been your philosophy down through these many years?
Oh, you mean that I stayed with it?
Well, that's gone for sure. What I mean, to be a farmer, you have to hang in there. Isn't that right?
Yeah. Like my dad always said, a farmer, where you lose is where you make. You got to stay with it. So he was a great believer, and I wanted to quit in the Depression days, and my wife says, no, we're staying here. So we're pretty lucky that we stayed here. Yeah.
Had your ups and downs, of course.
Oh, yeah, we had our ups and downs. Lost my herd of dairy cattle in the early 20s and abortion, and then we started in again, do it over.
The story of a farmer. That's about what it adds up, John. The story as told by John Malloy, who is certainly an old-timer here in Washington County, living on a farm about 105 years old, John?
Well, 103? It would be 104.
104-year farm that's been in the Malloy family for 104 years. That's a long time. Thanks, John.